We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Today we're talking with members of a student group at the University of Illinois called La Colectiva. We have three students with us, Jesse Hoyt, Celeste Larkin, and Brad Bolton. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us on the program.
Jesse, let's start with you. You're the president of this group. What does it do? What is La Colectiva?
La Colectiva is a registered student organization here on campus at the University of Illinois that is comprised of predominantly Latino students, however, encompasses a bunch of students from all different walks of life and encompasses a bunch of different organizations in Champaign-Urbana. And predominantly we focus on social justice issues and for the past few years have been fighting for immigration reform.
Now, immigration reform, we scheduled this program several weeks ago, but that's a quite current issue given what happened last Friday in Arizona. For listeners who might have missed that news, the state of Arizona now has a law that makes it illegal to be for illegal aliens. Police can stop people. They can ask them to produce papers to show that they are not an illegal alien. This has been quite controversial, but it certainly is a current issue. So what's your take on immigration? What do you think needs reforming as a group? What do you as a group think?
I think one thing that is alarming about the new Arizona bill is not necessarily that it makes it illegal for undocumented people to be in the state, but it also allows police officers to stop individuals who, quote unquote, appear as if they don't have papers. So
how would one know?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it appears to most of the critics of the bill that this is racial profiling written into law. So the alarming extent to which the right side of the debate has gone, I think, requires even more activism and more reform on not only legally but also in the consciousness of the American public about what immigration is and what immigrants do for this country.
What would you like listeners to know about those issues, immigration?
Specifically, what parts of?
Well, you said you felt there needed to be more discussion about this in public, and we have a great forum here right now.
Yeah.
What are some factors in the immigration issue that people need to know about?
Well, I think that you know one of the things that we've been focusing on campus is the DREAM Act, which is a bipartisan piece of legislation which would allow undocumented students a path to citizenship. And as students, we are in classrooms with undocumented students who don't have the same rights as us, don't have the same opportunities as us. And so, you know, specifically when we've been talking about immigration reform, we've been talking about reform for our classmates, our friends who are sitting in class with us. And so that's kind of what we've been pushing for.
What kind of stories have you heard from some of those classmates? Yes, Brad, go ahead.
Well, Steve, we've been dealing with a lot of different students. Just last semester, La Colectiva was especially involved with one student named Rigo Padilla, who was going to actually be deported in December. And when we started, it looked as if it was inevitable that he was going to be deported, but a bunch of students started rallying around him and fighting it, and eventually his case got noticed by the city council, and every member that was kind of fighting for Rio's case, we ended up being successful in getting a stay of deportation for him. But there are plenty more students out there that have similar situations to Rio, who himself was a very good student and just got caught in a misdemeanor, and his public defender turned him over. And so there are a lot of other students out there who just don't have the voice to be able to defend themselves. And that's kind of what why we're fighting for the DREAM Act, because that would be a tool for themselves to kind of reach their ultimate goal of citizenship.
If I can add on to what Brad was saying, there are tons of students who go through grammar school and high school without knowing that they're undocumented. And then when it comes time to applying for college or getting a driver's license, applying for FAFSA for the financial aid to get into college, their families tell them that they're undocumented. And these are, you know, students who want to continue their education or they want to get a job, but they're not able to because, you know, they lack the social security number. And so, you know, we go to class with these kids who are incredibly hardworking, you know, want to succeed and want to contribute to society, but, you know, are left in the shadows and, you know, aren't given the opportunities that they really deserve.
Let's talk about this specific case you mentioned earlier. If I could go back to you, Brad, how did you first hear about Rigo's situation?
Well, last semester, as I mentioned to you, Steve, earlier, I'm also involved with Amnesty International, and we pick a issue each semester to kind of focus on within human rights in general. And last semester, we were focusing on immigration reform and specifically immigration detention. But we got involved working with La Colectiva that way, and that's how I myself got involved with La Colectiva. And just through – I mean, there were Facebook groups. There were – I don't remember the specific means of learning about him that I got news about him through, but we just heard about him through the different student networks, his network of support that was starting to build, and it just kind of grew from there.
And what argument did you make that was eventually successful to get his deportation halted?
Well, I think the argument that was made was that he has been here since he was, I think, 6 years old, and I mean, he never knew – well, he knew after a while that he was undocumented, but he has been living here his whole life. This is his home. He hasn't known any other home, really. And so to send him back to a country which really is not his home, when America is his home and he wants to work hard to be a community leader within America, it's as if we're sending an asset away, as if the government or the powers that be are telling him, you can't contribute to this society, which you are a part of. And so I think the city council and...
Which city?
Chicago. Okay. He was a student of the University of Illinois at Chicago when he received news that he was going to be deported. And so I think the city started listening to the rallies and the students and his support group that, you know, this was his home, that he was a contributing member of society, even if he was quote-unquote, undocumented.
Okay. Let me give the phone numbers for listeners who'd like to join this conversation. We're always eager for people to participate. If you live in Champaign-Urbana, where this program where the studio is, punch in 333-9455. If you're listening where it's a long-distance call for you, perhaps on the Internet, use our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana, several local lines you can get by punching in 333-9455. That's in the 217 area code, of course. Or if it's long distance, 1-800-222-WILL 9455. Well, let's get back to talking with our three University of Illinois students about immigration reform and the need of it. How did each of you get interested in this topic? Celeste, can we start with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you had said before, I am a Spanish major here at University of Illinois, and I am from a suburb of Chicago to the north of Chicago called Mundelein. And the population of Mundelein in the past few years has approached about the point where about half the population is Latino or Latina. And I myself have worked, you know, throughout high school and college in different restaurants or in the food industry a lot, and have confronted the segregation in the workforce that occurs, whether it be for linguistic, class, or socioeconomic reasons. There's certainly a segregation in the workforce and in the community. And there's kind of a complacency toward it. I think the suburbs are not the most conducive communities to activism. And I just transferred actually to Illinois last semester. And,
from where?
From a small school in Iowa called Grinnell.
Very good liberal arts college.
Yeah, and very good, very small, very small.
Yes.
About 1,300 students, and it's in the middle of a small town. There's only so much one can do to be active around a highly politicized issue when it's not at your immediate surroundings. When I came to Urbana-Champaign, there's a lot more activism, and La Colectiva is a perfect example of a group that mobilizes around this. Just yesterday, in response to the Arizona bill, we held a vigil at the alma mater on campus, and to kind of stand in solidarity with those in Arizona. But the thing is, this is a national crisis that's occurring. It's happening in microcosms in the Southwest, in the Chicagoland area, wherever there are undocumented students and undocumented people. So it's something that we should have at the forefront of our mind. But I became a Spanish major because I'm interested in advocacy, either political or social. But La Colectiva is a wonderful outlet for that kind of work.
We have a telephone call I want to get to. But before we do that, how many years were you at Grinnell?
Two.
2 years there.
Yeah.
And why did you pick Illinois?
For a whole gamut of reasons, among them being the experience of going to a small liberal arts school, plus a large liberal arts school, I guess, and the kind of resources that are available here, the kind of financial aid that's available here is versus a small private school out of state.
And you were an in-state student, which makes it cheaper.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to our caller in from Champaign on line number one. Yes, you're on the air with our guests from La Colectiva.
Okay, hello.
Hi.
I have a question/observation.
Sure.
When Rigo received a stay of deportation, does this mean that could this happen when he finishes school? Could this whole subject of being undocumented come up again? Is he going to have to face this throughout the rest of his life?
Anybody know?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. He, unfortunately, what was passed will only provide him a year of security.
Oh.
And then from that, his court case will come up again. But the hope behind getting him to stay and the kind of hope behind the DREAM Act is that it will allow, this DREAM Act is geared for undocumented students. And the idea is, we can keep on putting off the deportation until the DREAM Act is passed, where he will fall directly under it and will be able to get a pathway to citizenship.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Tell us more about the DREAM Act.
So the DREAM Act is a bipartisan piece of legislation which was actually created by our...
This is federal law we're talking about.
It is, mm-hmm. It is. And it was created by our very own Senator Dick Durbin from Chicago. And this bipartisan piece of legislation would allow undocumented students a pathway to citizenship. Specifically, it stands for the Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors Act. And under that, there's a number of guidelines that the students would have to kind of fall under in order to get that pathway to citizenship.
And where is it in its legislative journey?
it's had a really tough journey. And it, unfortunately, it hasn't been passed yet. I mean, obviously, we're still fighting for this.
Neither the House nor the Senate has passed it yet.
Neither. Okay. It was introduced 9 years ago now, so
wow.
So 2001. And since then, it's a bipartisan bill, so there are both Republicans and Democrats supporting this bill. And each year it's been gathering more and more support. However, it's still kind of stuck in, under a bunch of papers. Immigration reform has been pushed onto the back burner in the past few years because we've been dealing with the economy and the war in Afghanistan and
Iraq and healthcare.
Yeah.
But hasn't it also been avoided by the legislators, both the Senate and the House, because it's so controversial and there's such strong passions about it? People who say, we've got to put up walls on our borders. We've got to keep people out there sucking dry the country. And you have other people who say, no, most of us who are here came from immigrant stock. And why shouldn't we be more welcoming?
Mm-hmm.
And there are good people on both sides of that issue. as you well know, probably from talking to your own families, if from nothing else. Mm-hmm. So, perhaps the Arizona bill that passed last Friday for that state, some people are at least saying, well, that may push the federal government to actually come up and wrestle with this mm-hmm. in some kind of a way.
Mm-hmm. I think to respond to your observation of how controversial this issue is, specifically with the DREAM Act, well, let me back up a little bit. La Colectiva actually fundraised before spring break and sent a bus to Washington, D.C. For the March 21st march on the Capitol for immigration reform.
To lobby, to educate.
Exactly, exactly. So there were 200,000 people there, and it was an incredible movement. The day afterward, a few of us got to stay and do more explicit action lobbying specific legislators. And I spoke to Melissa Bean, who is a representative from my district up north of Chicago. And from what I understood about that lobbying effort, as well as the other ones that were occurring at the same time, was that the DREAM Act, specifically as a part of this legislation, is the easiest, one of the easiest to support.
Yeah.
It just makes the most sense. It's for a generation of young people who really, you know, people say like they had very little choice coming to this country, and
they've
now that they're here,
yeah.
they are for all intents and purposes, besides some legal documents and signed papers, citizens.
Sure.
And they merit the same kind of rights. The issue of immigration more largely itself is extremely divisive, but something like this, this action in Arizona really, really displays that. But I think you're right when you say that it's going to require the federal government to react and Capitol Hill to react because – you know, for example, President Obama commenting about the irresponsible move in Arizona is not very common for a president to comment about state legislation. And this clearly merits more attention and mobilization on the part of the senators and representatives.
Now, it hasn't happened too much yet, except on Fox News over this weekend. But we know starting Monday, the right-wing radio is going to be applauding Arizona and saying every state should do this and it should be a federal policy. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to that, Brad?
Yeah, I certainly hope that won't occur. While I do expect it to happen. But I think what's most concerning about this is that no matter how you look at it and no matter how you feel about the need for either stemming or supporting undocumented immigrants from entering the country and from becoming citizens, this bill basically allows police officers to it legalizes basically racial profiling. They can look at an individual and based on their appearance pull them over. And that, I think, takes us back 20, 30 years to the civil rights movement when, you know, we have
different classes of citizens.
Right, exactly. And so to pass any bill that allows something like that where one individual gets to detain another based on the color of their skin or the way they dress or maybe where they're driving and to kind of instill that fear in any people, I mean, even legal immigrants or natural-born citizens who happen to be of Hispanic origin will have to be worried about getting pulled over at any time. And so I think that's completely absurd and totally ridiculous and unconstitutional, I believe. But
now, you mentioned, Brad, that you were part of another organization besides La Colectiva called Amnesty International on this UVI campus.
Yes, that's right.
You told me earlier you're president of that. What got you involved in Amnesty International?
Yes, I'm actually co-president.
Co-president, all right.
But I got involved in Amnesty International really on campus last year. Amnesty International itself is an international organization that was started in the 1960s by an English lawyer who had heard about a case of two Portuguese students who were imprisoned for 7 years or sentenced to 7 years in prison for toasting to liberty. And so it's kind of become this giant human rights organization. It's probably one of the most, if not the most well-known human rights organization in the world. And so we have a chapter on campus, which is specifically what I am co-president of. And I got involved with that. I think what Celeste was talking about earlier, kind of the suburbs not being the ideal place for activism. That's kind of the background I come from. I come from a very racially homogenous school in Palatine, Illinois. And it is a northwest suburb of Chicago. And I think I've kind of, I think I grew up with a very strong sense of justice and fairness just based on my family. But I wasn't as aware of the issues that were affecting, you know, kind of the outside world. I like to think that I was, but coming to the University of Illinois, I realized that there were a lot of things that I did not know about. And I started to get involved. I think the Patriot Act was the big thing that got me involved with social justice and learning about the war on terror. And from there, I just kind of became more aware about the other issues, both inside and outside of our country. And that kind of naturally led to me joining the Amnesty International chapter on campus.
Now, we have another phone call I want to get to quickly, but let me just say both Amnesty International and La Colectiva are registered student organizations at the university. Any student can join them, but they're also a part of the University YMCA, which collects a lot of student groups that are activists, that are concerned about social justice issues, community service. We want to be sure to mention the fact that the University YMCA is involved in supporting both of these organizations. Let's go to our caller on line number one, again from Champaign. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I think the issue of illegal aliens is a significant issue. And actually, the problem with Arizona is the fact that the federal government has failed to enforce the federal laws. And as a result, Arizona as a state has had to deal with issues which the federal government has failed to deal with. So Obama saying it's unfortunate is really a failure on his part, or his administration, to deal with something. So what we need to do is ask ourselves, how do we really deal with illegal aliens? What are we going to do? And I use the word illegal alien because I notice you make a point of saying undocumented. But the fact of the matter is they are here illegally, and there are consequences. So what do we do about that? What do we do about the economic issues? What do we do about the legal issues? What do we do about all the other issues? So that, I think by playing word games, calling it undocumented, you're already avoiding the major issue. And the fact that the federal government doesn't deal with the illegality in terms of employers, in terms of economics, in terms of school system, all further contribute to the problem. So thank you.
All right. Who would like to respond? Celeste?
Yeah, I'm certainly interested by that commentary. And gosh, where to begin? So I guess if you're going to talk about not playing word games, I am all for that. I think we can call things what they are, including that the Arizona bill is racial profiling. That's one place we can start. If you want to also talk about the incredible array of issues that are wrapped up in something like immigration reform, certainly it expands and touches every aspect of our lives, all of our communities, and all of our personal histories. It also, if you want to talk about economics and employment and federal policies, and we can talk about NAFTA, we can talk about CAFTA, we can talk about what happens on the other side of the border of Arizona where, you know, there are maquiladoras that are abusing their workers, or there are neoliberal policies that are wiping out local economies and forcing people to migrate to this country. We can talk about how we benefit off of the labor that is done by undocumented persons. And I use the word undocumented because I think it's more appropriate to call a person, a human being, undocumented, to recognize the fact that they are still human, that they still abide by the majority of our laws, but they just lack a certain
Paperwork,
exactly. And it just feels so arbitrary to use that as a means for labeling them as less than any other person here. It's It's an incredible privilege to have citizenship, and it's an incredible privilege to have, legal recognition under the law. And I think we need to be very conscious of what contributes to our privilege. And that's the work of those who don't gain the same kind of benefits that we do. I don't know if anybody wants to comment, because I could go on the terminology I could go on about forever.
Any comment from either the other two of you, Brad or Jesse, on the terms, on why you choose to say undocumented?
I think I'd like to personally speak up about, what's happening on the federal level. I mean, I would agree with our caller that there needs to be more action on the federal level. We can see there are, over 12 million undocumented here in the States. And, the issue is what to do with them. Now, these are people who are really hardworking in this country, work jobs that I necessarily haven't done. And yet, they clean our tables. They take care of our children. They
often pay income tax as well. So they definitely contribute to the economy of our society.
Yeah, and I think that, what we're talking about now is finding them a pathway to citizenship. We're not talking about amnesty. We're talking about finding them a way to kind of come out of the shadows.
So even if you might acknowledge that they might be here illegally, you're trying to find a way that they can be made legal, like most of the rest of us. Somehow our families got made legal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're about halfway through our program, Keeping the Faith. Let me reintroduce our guests and give the phone numbers again for people who'd like to join the conversation. 333-9455, if it's a local call from the Champaign-Urbana area within the 217 area code. If you're calling long distance, use 1-800-222-9455. And, of course, remind listeners, this program, if you've missed part of it, would like to hear it or pass it on to others, you may go online and find us at will.illinois.edu/AM. And then look for Keeping the Faith, and you'll see this program will be archived at that site within a week or two. And if you've want to hear other programs from Keeping the Faith or Focus 580 or Afternoon Magazine, any of the locally produced programs, you can find them at that site, will.illinois.edu. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. Next week, I'll be talking with Reverend Dr. Brett Smith, who is a senior pastor at the University Baptist Church here in Champaign-Urbana, about his new book published by Princeton called Labor's Millennium, Christianity, Industrial Education, and the Founding of the University of Illinois. If you are curious about the theological history of the founding of the University of Illinois from the perspective of Christian history, it should be an interesting conversation. That's May 2nd here Sunday night, 5 to 6 Central Time on AM 580. My guest on May 9th will be Brian Souder from Faith in Place. Long-time listeners will remember that we talked 2 years ago with a representative from Chicago in Faith in Place, and now this is a group that's expanded here to the University of Illinois region, and Brian Souder will be talking about ecology and how congregations of Muslim, Christian, Jewish, whatever, can be involved in working for a more sustainable universe. On May 16, our guests will be from the Baha'i Children's Theater, and we'll be talking with Helen Katz. Those are some of the programs coming up here on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. Let me just take 1 second before we go to our phones, and our phone lines are all busy, so we have several people waiting to talk on this subject with our guests today. But let me compliment a guest we had on this program 2 weeks ago. We talked with folks from Interfaith in Action that were organizing in a very short amount of time a way to provide 1 million meals for people in Haiti, who are suffering because of the earthquake, of course. And I'm happy to be able to report that I talked to Greg Damhorst, who was one of our guests 2 weeks ago, a graduate student here at the University of Illinois, soon to be graduate student, just graduated as an undergraduate December, whose idea this was. And he reported to me that by 2:30 this afternoon, a million meals had been prepared. The trucks will be going off Monday morning carrying these million meals. There were over 4,200 volunteers. A quarter of them were students from the University of Illinois who went yesterday and today and helped bag these things. And, of course, many people from the community. And the church I attended this morning in Philo, the Presbyterian church there, the pastor reported that they had volunteers there yesterday, and it was amazing that they had 880,000 meals bagged by 5:30 yesterday afternoon, and they didn't even need the youth group from the Philo Presbyterian Church to go today because it was clear they were going to have them all done very early. So congratulations to the students and others in the community who participated and helped bring off that wonderful event. Well, let's get to some of our phones. Let's start with from Urbana, line number one. Yes, you have a comment? Line number one?
Urbana?
Yes, hello? Urbana. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I have a question for our guest. How do we justify what's illegal as a law that's in place, and then you're focused so much on profiling but not focused so much on what's right and wrong in a law, and you're justifying breaking that law? I don't understand how you're things so differently. I wish you'd comment on that.
Okay. Who wants to respond? Thanks for the call.
Well, I think that we can talk about, as far as like laws and the morality of laws, especially with immigration laws. I think we have a long history in this country of producing laws that speak to immigration that have not been the most morally sound, we could say.
Give us an example, Celeste.
So, you know, in the past, a lot of our laws have been based not necessarily on morality, but on the need for labor. Those two things go hand in hand. When there is a labor demand, that's when, our borders are opened up. When there's an economic crisis, that's when people start to get a lot more xenophobic.
Xenophobic is a big word. Tell us what it means.
Just afraid of outsiders, okay. I guess. Yeah. And sorry, I'm clearly a college student. Sorry about that. I think, you could talk about, specifically immigration issues from Mexico. And there have been periods in time where we've needed assistance, for instance, during the World War I or World War II in our agricultural sectors. We literally, quite literally, shipped people from Mexico here for work.
And it was business and corporations that were pushing for that to happen.
Sure. And whoever was lobbying for it definitely happened, not because it was morally sound, but because there was an economic need or a labor push. As soon as the war was over, as soon as people came back and needed employment, people were literally shipped out. And whether or not they were shipped in the first place, whether or not they were born here, if they were of Mexican descent, they were shipped out. I don't know what kind of morality would go behind that kind of a law, but I think it begs the question of are our laws always based on morals? And I would argue no. And so I think we need to constantly be criticizing our laws and demanding that they, reflect our moral needs, not necessarily just our economic needs.
I'm gonna go to line number four. Someone who's on the road on a cell phone. Before you get in a wreck, ask your question or make your comment, please. Line number four.
Hello, how are you today?
Yes.
What I would like to ask these young people is, I'm a second generation immigrant. My mother and father waited for better than 2 years to get into this country. Now I find it insulting that you're going to offer amnesty to people to come to this country illegally. I mean, we had to wait for weeks and weeks. I was a baby. I don't remember. My mother is very upset about what's going on right now. They had to wait to find somebody who would basically sponsor them to let them go ahead and stay here. And they waited 2 years to get that far along. Yet all at once, all at once to offer amnesty to all these people. Well, where does the MC end? Say I would agree with them and say, okay, we offer amnesty this day, very day. the 25th of next month, the next 10,000 illegal immigrants? Are you going to say amnesty to them, too? I mean, this is what this is approaching. We do have laws. People who are still coming into this country legally and abiding by them, I feel that they should be honored by not agreeing to legalize these illegal immigrants.
Appreciate the point very much. Let's hear a response to it. Thanks for the call. Brad, you're president of Amnesty International. What do you think about amnesty? Is that fair or not?
Well, first, I think I would like to ask where you have come from and what type of background. I find it interesting that you said, you know, it was a couple of weeks they had to wait.
A couple of years.
Well, yeah. Either way, it's usually a 3 to 7 year process, even with comprehensive immigration reform, even if that were to happen. And I personally know many legal immigrants that are going through this. I know I said I came from a very racially homogenous area back home, but we do have a significant Korean population, and some of my closest friends are from Korea, and they have a myriad problems that they have to deal with. I mean, healthcare, but that goes all back to their status as they're here legally, but they're pursuing citizenship, and it takes years upon years, and it's a very difficult, archaic, very hard to understand, especially for someone who has to learn English when they come here as well. And so I think to say that it's unfair to give amnesty, first off, we're not even with the DREAM Act especially, we're not proposing amnesty. The DREAM Act gives a way, a path for young people who have been here, and it creates a cap. One of the arguments I've heard is that, you know, any legislation you pass that gives people a path to citizenship is kind of provide this carrot for people to keep coming in. Well, with the DREAM Act, that's not the case because there's a limit. You had to have come here. I think if you're older than like 35 years old, I mean, it keeps getting pushed back because the legislation keeps getting pushed back. But there's a cap on when you have entered this country, and there's a young cap too. So you can't, after this bill is passed, after a couple years, you no longer this no longer will apply to you. And so it's just a way for people that are here to start getting. Getting into citizenship, and they have to go through school or the military. And so there are things they have to do to prove that they can contribute to society and aren't just here to to receive amnesty or to be unfair. I don't think it's easier for an undocumented immigrant to become a person or to live their life than it is for someone who was lucky enough to come here and do things the quote-unquote correct way.
And Jesse, let me ask you again. The acronym DREAM, for listeners who may have joined us late, that stands for?
The Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors Act. And if I can also add on to something that Brad was saying. So
to respond to the caller, sure.
Right. The process that we're talking about isn't immediate. So if this bill, the DREAM Act, or the kind of current comprehensive immigration bills that are on the table were passed, they wouldn't automatically become citizens. This is a process that takes years. And this is not only that, but they're going to have to pay a huge amount of money, which most of them don't have the money to pay. So it's we're not talking about an amnesty where all of a sudden, you know, hundreds of thousands and millions of undocumented immigrants are all of a sudden going to be citizens. This is going to be something that takes time. But we have to realize that there are over 12 million undocumented here, and we've got to figure out how to get them out of the shadows and how to, you know, bring them into kind of the society that. Yeah.
Let's go to another caller, line number 2 in Urbana. Yes, you're on the air with our guest from La Colectiva. Go ahead.
Yes. Just have a question. If you're an illegal alien at the moment, are you allowed to enlist in the military?
Yes, you are.
So that's a pathway to citizenship that's legal for them right now, right?
Actually, not necessarily. I do know a little bit about the military myself, and while promises have been made by the military, they're not always followed up on. Sometimes they are able to become citizens that way, but sometimes they're just kind of left hanging.
And a lot of time what we're seeing now is recruiters who, you know, are desperate to get people to join the military now are telling undocumented youth that if you come through the military, we can help your family get citizenship as well. But what they fail to mention is that although they can start getting that particular soldier a pathway to citizenship, the families have to go through a completely different path, which takes even longer. And not only that, but the amount of the terms that you have to serve, the amount of time that you have to serve in the military is so long. And so now what's happening is these undocumented soldiers are now dying in battle or getting wounded, and they still don't have their citizenship. So they're dying for a country that won't even recognize their citizenship. You know,
yeah,
they're fighting alongside other people.
Don't they have a green card? Don't they get a green card right away?
That's
They do get a green card,
yeah,
so they're allowed to stay, but not necessarily their families, and they're still not citizens.
Your
so
green
if
card doesn't
about,
allow your citizenship. It's almost like a permanent resident, except your green card can be taken away just as easily. Your citizenship can't.
Yeah, but still, that's a pathway for them to go through right now, so that's kind of good, isn't it?
It is good, but I think it's kind of from my perspective, at least, kind of a pathetic compromise for somebody to be putting their life on the line and fighting in such brutal environments for a country that won't even recognize their rights as a human being fully or as a member of society fully. I think that that's a little bit controversial and begs some more questions.
And how can I tell my friends who are, you know, in school with me and engineers and scientists that, you know, you're really smart, your grades are better than mine, and yet the best way for you to become a citizen right now is to join the military?
It's an all-volunteer army, and you know, believe me, they're all volunteers. So to me, there already is a pathway, so you should actually be emphasizing that and then try to expand it with, like, other type of service for the country. That, to me, would help you win your position more. I would think.
Well, thank you for your comment. Let me just say that it strikes me as extremely cynical that we would say that we would pass laws that say, well, if we don't want you here, and we think, you know, we want to send you back where you came from, but if you'll go and fight in our wars, then you can stay. I mean, that just seems, just gives me the willies.
But I think I think our caller might even, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but might be a proponent or at least agree with some aspect of the DREAM Act, which, you know, provides a pathway to citizenship once somebody completes 4 to 2 years in an institution of higher education, or I think it's 4 years in the military. So there certainly are concessions for that perspective as well in something like the DREAM Act. Like the caller had said, we should encourage that, and that's what the DREAM Act does. I personally would prefer to encourage the educational aspect, but there definitely is service to this country in a number of different ways. And you're right, it's a volunteer army. If somebody should choose to join the military because they want to, then that they should be granted citizenship upon completion or even, I think, upon entering the military. So,
well, you're hardly a volunteer if the threat is deportation.
Exactly.
But let's go to line number 3. Another caller, this time from Champaign. Yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to comment on, it seemed like a lot of the conversation about that one caller calling in about illegal aliens and that whole language, it seemed like a lot of the commentary that was being given back to that person was trying to convince this person that of all of the benefits that we have for having people who are undocumented in the United States. And it just kind of seemed like it missed the opportunity to also let this person know that, you know, the whole notion of immigrant status is a social construction that, you know, I'm thinking about myself and my family. We're here. I'm a Chicana, and so before the U.S.-Mexico border was created, my family was here. And once that border was created, part of my family became U.S. citizens, and part of my family ended up being in Mexico, what's now considered Mexico. And so when I think about it, you know, I have a Ph.D. I'm here in the United States, and it seems like a lot of people don't recognize that for many of us, you know, we didn't cross the border. The border crossed us. And that that many other groups who think of themselves as having kind of come here through particular pathways don't understand the U.S.-Mexico relationship, which is a different relationship than, say, people who've come here from Italy or Ireland or some of these other places that I think a lot of people have ancestry in. And so I guess I just felt like that was an important comment to make, because it seems like that people are very opportunistic about when they want to call somebody an immigrant or not, or somebody that's illegal, excuse me, or not, based on like what some of the people from La Colectiva have been saying, which is we want people to be citizens. We're allowing people to be in and to be humans when they do all this hard work for us. They serve in our wars and they, you know, pick up our trash and clean our tables and pick all the crops. But then we don't necessarily want to think about, you know, historically, how have some people been socially constructed as illegal aliens? That's it.
Thank you for the comment. I'm seeing several hands here. People who want to respond?
I just wanted to say I had responded to that question, and I'm so grateful that you called in and articulated that in a far more concise and productive way than I might have. I think when that language is used, illegal alien, I have been so heavily vested in this in language and in this debate for long enough to just be frustrated by that language. But I think that you're absolutely right that it takes taking a few steps back and actually, like, understanding critically what history defines this debate and how we use that language, like you said, as a socially construct notions of illegality and legality and who is okay to be here and who's not. And like the caller said so well, I'm so grateful for that call. It's convenient for us every once in a while to use illegal alien. It's convenient for us to use migrant labor. It's convenient for us to use undocumented persons in different cases, and I couldn't agree more with that position. And I wonder where you're pursuing a PhD, because I kind of want to join your field.
And Jesse Hoyt, you had a comment.
What she said.
Again, our guests today are Jesse Hoyt, who is president of La Colectiva, that's working for immigration reform. Celeste Larkin, who's on the board of governors of the Y, representing. University Y, representing La Colectiva, and Brad Bolton, who's co-president of Amnesty International and a member of La Colectiva, our guest today. We have another caller waiting, this time from Urbana on line number one. Go ahead.
Yes. I just have a question. If you know, I've heard these debates over and over again, and I am convinced of the injustice of our present laws. No matter how you look at it economically or morally or whichever way, we have a responsibility to do something about it. Now, I hear about bills going to up to Congress, but what about me? What about here in Urbana? What can I do? I don't think that our representative is keen on the idea of comprehensive immigration reform, but I want
to talk about Tim Johnson.
Yes. Yes. So what else can I do? I want this taken care of as soon as possible. It is. I've seen friends that are married to people from other countries that have to go years waiting for paperwork. If a Mexican wants to ask for their mother, they have to wait years. If they want to ask for a sibling, it's 16 years to have them come legally. A Filipino has to wait 22 years to bring in their sibling. It's just too much. Something needs to be done. I'd like to participate. How do I do?
Response?
I agree with the caller. Specifically, Tim Johnson, briefly, we have met with him. No, we haven't met with him in the past. We've met with some of his representatives. He's never been available to meet with us, but they do not move on this kind of an issue, and it is incredibly frustrating to confront that kind of reluctance on their part. But something that we actually, as a student group, I encourage any student on campus who might be listening to this or off campus, anybody in general, to attend our meetings if you are interested in getting more involved. We meet at La Casa, the cultural house, the Latina cultural house, on Nevada Street at 7:30 on Wednesdays. And we also, you could get on our email list that way as well. Our email is lacolectivarso@gmail.com.
Lacolectivarso at
gmail.com.
Gmail.com.
Thank you.
All right.
I need to enunciate a little better. But and you can find out how to get involved by contacting us that way and get involved with our activist movement. For instance, anybody who's on that email list server got information about our vigil, which happened this past Sunday. And anybody who's on it currently will also get information about the rally that we're going to be holding at the Champaign County Courthouse in Urbana. I think it's on the corner of the southeast corner of Main and Broadway, 101 East Main Street in Urbana, for the May Day event. Next May Day is this coming Saturday. It's May 1st, and historically it's
and
been...
And that'll be at 11 o'clock, you
11
said.
11 a.m., mm-hmm. Thank you, yes. And May Day is a day, for anybody that doesn't know, that historically has celebrated triumphs and promoted the struggles of the labor movement. And that, as we have mentioned before, is inextricably linked with immigration issues. So we're going to be holding a rally outside of the courthouse this coming Saturday.
And that's in Champaign County Courthouse in the city of Urbana, mm-hmm. on Main Street. Okay.
Exactly, exactly. So that's one way you can get involved. Get informed. Start discussions. Use the right terminology, you know. Understand what the terminology means. Look at the history and make these conversations more apparent. A giant luxury of – I speak for myself, but I know I speak for a number of the other people in the group – is that we can be visible about this, is that we have documents, is that we are not threatened. Using our own energies and our own privileges to promote this kind of social justice is crucial. So getting involved yourself, understanding what your privilege means and talking about it and talking about those who don't have our privilege and who therefore uphold our privilege. You can get involved explicitly with our group, and I encourage everybody who's listening to get involved themselves in their own ways.
Caller, did you want to follow up with that? I guess we've lost that person. You mentioned for people who are in the Champaign-Urbana area opportunities. Are there groups that are more widespread, perhaps national, that you'd want to let listeners know about that are concerned about immigration reform?
We've been doing a lot of work with the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, which is based out of Chicago. And it's a group that is comprised of social justice groups and groups that are working with immigrant groups all over Chicago and outside of Chicago, all over Illinois. And it's through them that we've been learning some of the action that's been happening more on a national level.
Repeat the name of that group.
The Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, ICRR. And through that, actually, was one of the first ways that we heard about who we talked about earlier, Rigo Padilla, and the undocumented student in Chicago who had been deported. And through groups similar to ICRR, we've been able to kind of piggyback and learn a little bit more about the immigration reform issue.
Mm-hmm. We're down to our last 5 or 6 minutes. We could probably work in another call or two if they're brief. Let me give the phone numbers, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. We're talking with Celeste Larkin, Jesse Hoyt, and Brad Bolton about immigration reform. Spell La Colectiva for folks who may not speak Spanish.
Sure. L-A space C-O-L. ECTIVA.
One L.
La Colectiva. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, if I may follow up to the previous caller who was talking about actions for people to do. I think, this Arizona legislation and I feel like we're at a breaking point right now. It reminded me of the Sensenbrenner movement that actually backlashed and had so many people out in the streets calling for immigration reform. And I think something that the Arizona bill might do is very similar. And I encourage people to write to their legislators, especially those in Illinois, write to Durbin's office and make it clear that this is something that needs to be put on the floor soon. As soon as possible. I think we're at, like I said, the breaking point. And should there be more of a push from the public, you can write letters, make phone calls, write emails, express your concern and express that you would like to see this legislation pass. And if nothing else, express concern over the DREAM Act, because I think that's something that most people can agree on, and that is absolutely urgent. And we speak from a perspective of students going to classes with undocumented people, and the urgency of that
and the daily trials that those students face, I can't even imagine. I can barely, you know, make sure I, you know, get all my homework done and get sleep at night. You know, I can't imagine having the extra incredible weight of that kind of anxiety of being undocumented. So yeah, point being, contact your legislatures and express what you feel about the DREAM Act and about immigration reform.
Now, Dick Durbin, as a sponsor of this act, obviously is for it, and the other Illinois senator is, but I don't happen to know about the Indiana Senate's senators. Do either any of you?
Richard Lugar, who is a Republican from Indiana, was one of the also co-sponsors of this bill.
Great.
And he's been really for it, as well as a few other. Mel Martinez, who's a Republican from Florida, Patrick Leahy from Vermont. Kind of all over the country we're seeing state representatives and senators call it.
There is support, and of course we have listeners online from all over the country, so we encourage them to contact their representatives. We have another call on line number one. Yes, go ahead. Fisher?
Yeah. One thing I would like to say about the Arizona bill, they're going to increase, you know, police powers. Rather than probable cause, you know, it's going to reasonable suspicion, mm-hmm. you know, which is a dangerous precedent being set there.
You want to say more about that? You have a minute.
Also, I think you're, you know, the two people you have on there should not say so much.
Well, it's hard. It's hard not to when you're on live radio. But thank you for the comment. Appreciate it. I want to respond to either of his comments.
That sounds like my father. Was that my dad? Yeah. You know, I shouldn't say or like quite so much. But yeah, it's crazy that the police force is being militarized even in the Southwest where there is that border, and where they're not being militarized, they're just given such incredible power. And not just the rights of those undocumented persons, but the rights of all people are threatened to such an extent that there needs to be mobilization. But yeah, that it can be just a reasonable doubt or, you know, just a general suspicion that somebody might be undocumented. What else can they pull you over for? That's a violation of all of our rights. And I thank the caller for pointing that out.
We're down to our last 30 seconds or so, folks. Any last comments you'd like to make about immigration reform? Anything I've forgotten to ask?
Thank you for having me.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Well, let me thank our guests. Again, Jesse Hoyt, who's the president of La Colectiva, who's a junior in sociology. Celeste Larkin, who is a member of La Colectiva and their representative to the board of the University YMCA, which is the sponsoring organization. She's a junior in Spanish. Brad Bolton, who's co-president of Amnesty International in civil and environmental engineering, and he's also a member of Colectiva, which is working for immigration reform and is one of the student programs of the University YMCA. Let me again thank all the people who helped in another grand effort to get 1 million meals prepared here in Champaign County for Haiti in a day and a half. It was a remarkable work. Over 4,200 volunteers worked yesterday and earlier this afternoon, and by 2:30 had 1 million meals bagged and ready to be shipped, boxed, ready to be shipped off to Haiti. Thank the Salvation Army for their great organization of that. There were about 25% of the volunteers were University of Illinois students. So let me commend not only the students here in the studio, but those students who took time out from study and other activities to do that kind of a very important social action. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for Keeping the Faith. Next week, I'll be talking with Reverend Dr. Brett Smith about his new book, Labor's Millennium. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.